We are now about to get the presentations for after lunch. I'm told that Adams and Adams is not here. Can you confirm, colleagues? They are not. So that makes our lives easier. They've done their written submission. Do we have action check?
Yeah.
Okay, you are the next. If you could come here and sit here. Now, the drill hasn't changed. You still have 15 minutes to present, even with your big five. And we will have 15 minutes to interact with your presentation. So that means, at least at 2:15, we should have done with what you want to present to us, and then from that time, then we can have time just to ask questions. But by 1:30, we are done. Is it okay? Okay. Thank you very much. You can just introduce yourself. You do know that this is the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlement. It's the legislative arm of government. It's not the government. So I do want always to clarify this, because remember the bill, at some point there was an interaction with the stakeholders by the department. This what we are doing now is an interaction with the legislative arm, which is Parliament. Okay. Thank you, because the bill now has come to us as Parliament. Thank you very much. Over to you, sir.
Morlo and Salbona, everyone, dear chairperson and committee. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this property practitioner's bill. I'm Sheldon Jennings. I'm a professional architect. I'm director of Archimedes Design and Archicheck. I support this bill, and I'm at your service and hope to be of assistance going forward. Earlier, the Madam Chair mentioned defects in after purchasing properties. You'll be pleased to know that I have some solutions for South Africans in that regard. I'm here to address a couple of things. Primarily the overlap of SACA, the South African Council for the Architectural Profession, and PPRA and its members. In the interest of consumer protection, the issue of non-qualified property inspectors needs to be addressed. And there's a requirement for tertiary education and recognition of qualifications for property inspectors. For background, the current status quo in South Africa is that there's neither formal training nor legislation to regulate the property inspection industry. Anyone can become an inspector regardless of their qualification. This puts South African consumers at great risk. There currently exist inspection firms which mislead the public into thinking that the inspectors are regulated and qualified. Some firms have done this by establishing their own education programs to certify their own employees, which is a huge conflict of interest. Additionally, the education programs are self-certified or certified by unreliable international associations, which are not held accountable to any standard of education recognized in South Africa. As such, this is a form of false advertising, and the lack of recognition of recognized education places the South African consumer at risk. I have given you some examples of firms that are doing this and ways in which they are self-regulating themselves. South African consumers need to be protected from underqualified and incompetent inspectors, as well as protection against false advertising currently seen in some of these firms. This brings me to Archicheck. In the interest of consumer protection and to make property inspection more accessible to the public, as well as due to the current lack of regulated, certified and legitimate property inspectors in South Africa, we decided to launch Archicheck. Archicheck is a property inspection company which hires only SACAP registered professional architects to perform inspections, and we'd like it to stay this way. As SACAP, registered architects. We understand to conduct high-quality property inspections and compile comprehensive reports on all property types. We provide clients with crucial information on any property in South Africa, allowing investors to make informed decisions. Now, especially when you get to your lower income brackets of a group of people, they don't know what to look for when they're buying property and will buy property that has latent defects or patent defects that they are then later have to fork out money to fix, and that impacts negatively on their investment. SACAP, the governing body for architects, protects the public. The South African Council for the Architectural Profession was established in 1971, is elected and appointed by the Public Minister of Works. It has over 10,000 registered architectural candidates and professionals and is recognized by the Council for the Built Environment already. Professional architects undergo rigorous training at accredited universities throughout South Africa. To be registered with SACAP as a professional architect, one must complete said training at internationally recognized institutes of higher education and complete a minimum of 2 years practical work as a candidate architect and abide by a code of conduct which is as thick as this. Not only have architects been inspecting structures as a standard scope of work for centuries, but SACAP and the Council for the Built Environment regulate and have also legally provided scope for architects to perform inspections, studies and surveys of existing buildings and premises. Such can be noted in Board Notice 121 of 2015, Gazette number 38863 of June 2015. This board notice provides for architects to perform additional services as identified by SACAP. These services include but are not limited to special management services, cost and valuation services, special inspections, feasibility, environmental and market studies, studies, surveys, inspections on the working premises, and other additional services mutually agreed upon. At Architect, we only hire SACAP registered professionals because architects are at the helm of the design and construction team. They are the most capable to deliver the most comprehensive and accurate property inspections possible. They are the only professionals other than structural engineers that are qualified and capable of determining structural faults, general aesthetic faults, and are among the only professionals trained and equipped and authorized to provide solutions to problems in buildings. So at the moment, a lot of other property inspectors have not got that sort of oversight and that kind of professional power to do these things properly. SACAP has the power to govern and regulate the architectural profession, its code of conduct, disciplinary actions, as well as a standard of additional services. Architects pay SACAP annual licensing and registration fees and adhere to SACAP's strict CPD structure. As such, I propose the following amendments to the Property Practitioners Bill. 1. That SACAP registered architects be exempt from paying additional licensing fees to the newly proposed PPRA, or to allow SACAP registered architects to be exempt from needing to register with the PPRA or NBISA. 2. The expansion of Chapter 1 definitions property practitioner to include SACAP registered architects whose scope of work includes the inspection of buildings or property, or the expansion of Chapter 1 exemption SACAP registered professionals exempt from registering with the PPRA. 3. That all property inspectors be required by law to go through certified training at a regulated tertiary institution. To make this viable financially, a course will be comprised of existing modules which are offered at universities across South Africa. Not limited to economics, detailing, construction techniques, professional practice, theory of construction, introductions to structures and structural engineering theory, as these would be vital for people to give sound advice to your consumers. Chapter 8, 46.1, to exclude SACAP registered architects from needing to apply for a Fidelity Fund certificate, as this would not apply. And Chapter 8, 53.1, to exempt South African registered architects from needing to apply and have trust accounts, as this would also not apply to architects solely doing inspections. You'll then see that I have put together a few sample suggestions of courses that could be offered to train property inspectors, and the purposes that were outlined there. So, for example, understanding the natural laws applicable to structures in buildings. Okay, all right. But in closing, I feel that the property inspection industry is completely unregulated at the moment. Not only that, but there's not adequate training, and that needs to happen through a tertiary and recognized institution. And there needs to be, we need to resolve the overlap between SACAP and the PPRA, so that registered architects only need to adhere to and abide by the SACAP's code of conduct. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. But the trust is that you've got no issues with the bill, but you just want to deal with the areas of concern.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let me allow honourable members to ask questions or clarity. Maybe whilst they are doing that, I don't know if I heard you correct, or maybe what is house check?
My firm is Archicheck. That's the property inspection and information firm. So if someone were to buy property, they come to us, we do an inspection and also tell them what they can and cannot develop legally. Housecheck is another firm that's currently existing. I didn't want to mention their name on record, but they are one of the firms that are self-regulating. The inspectors have no credentials to actually go and give sound advice to consumers. You know, they're going and buying property and they're getting...
I just wanted to check. There's no call.
Oh, house check is not related to me at all, no.
That's fine. Okay, thank you very much. I just wanted that clarity for myself. All right. Honourable member? The bill is supported. The big issue here is that... Yeah, okay. Honorable Solis? Let me rather... No.
Thanks, Chair. I mean, I just want to check with him, because he made sentiments in terms of the lack of regulation of the industry. In terms of your knowledge of the industry, I mean, you know, what drives that? Is it the lack of enforcement or simply just mastering of the art of, you know, industry players who know what to do in terms of circumventing the regulations that are in there, you know, because, I mean, if industries have been in the field of play for a longer time, they've mastered how to navigate the legislative environment because, you know, they are offering a product that's available. They are offering services that, you know, people are willing to pay for. And you're talking now about the lack of regulation. And, you know, there's two ways to go around this. One could be to increase enforcement, which one hopes that the bill eventually does. But one is the issue of compliance, which is, you know, proactive and self-driven by industry players. In terms of the studies you have done or your knowledge of the industry, how do you measure that in terms of responsiveness of the industry players towards compliance? And secondly, I mean, we've been hearing a lot of sentiment about exemptions from either the fees or, like, how do you think that's going to be constructive in the industry and what it intends to achieve, you know, because the sense I'm getting from different role players is that, you know, there's already statutory bodies that in one way or the other have some degree of regulation or that you belong to that, you know, you're already paying fees to and there's a degree of regulation in there, and that the bill as is seems to have some major overlaps cutting across different professions. So, in line with your presentation, how do you think that could be circumvented? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Soli. You are not going to talk before I say you must talk, because we're still going to ask some more questions before. I could see you were busy pressing there. Because before we give you time to talk, there was one area I wanted to add, that one, you you come across as somebody who's very passionate about the transformation in the country. And as you know, we've got young people and we've got the disadvantaged people that are not unemployed and untrained. And I just wanted to check your company, Architech. How much can you do to actually assist in making sure that we are able to skill those and making sure that they become, because remember, this sector we are talking about is untransformed. We would like to have entrants in this sector, particularly from the previous disadvantaged. What role do you think you could play as your company architect in making sure that that field is level played, in addition to what has been asked by everyone?
It is a difficult one because when you come to professions that, you know, people need to know what they're talking about. You cannot just have anyone off the street coming in giving such important, vital, crucial information on development and investments. So it would be incredibly difficult, I think, to try and fast-track that process because you really do need a solid education to be able to perform in this industry and to do your job properly. What I would say to that is that rather encourage people to go through those tertiary institutions, and it would still be feasible because you can integrate existing courses in those modules into a new course. And in doing so, you are also increasing jobs in the universities, and you're getting more students into those universities. Currently, it's a wide open industry. You know, it's at such an early stage where it's very easy for non-whites to get in and get their training. I'd say that during this intermediary process, you know, between now and then, Architech would definitely be willing to get on board and do some training, even if it's pro bono training. We're very, very pro that. As it stands, we work on a contract basis, and 50% of our employees are non-white. That's natural. But beyond that, I think it is very important that the people that we hire are qualified to do the job. That is of utmost importance, because if that falls short, then you do have people that are trying to come up in this and you're trying to buy properties, but then they bought it and it's a bad investment. They lose their money because someone has informed them incorrectly about the state of the house they bought or the state of the building that they're moving their company into. Can you please rephrase that briefly, if you don't mind? Okay.
Look, I mean, in your submission, you make reference to the lack of regulation in the industry, right? So my question was related to what do you think drives that, and what are your submission in circumventing that? Because I get the sense from your submission that you are hinting without being explicitly so at the lack of capacity in terms of regulating the industry, right? So I was flipping the other side of the coin, that there's also proactive steps that needed by the industry players to ensure compliance. So I wanted to assess, in terms of your knowledge of the industry, what do you think are the drivers of, you know, that lack of regulation in the industry? And secondly, was your view with regards to the motivation behind the request for exemption, you know, because it's not an isolated case. There were previous submissions that we had about, you know, because the bill seems to be cross-cutting different professions, that there's this constant request for exemption. So I was saying to you, my question to you was, in line with what the bill is trying to do, which is related to this particular industry, regardless of the cross-cutting aspect, how do you justify the request for exemptions from the fees? Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you for your question. Firstly, in terms of the reason why it's currently not regulated at all, is because people don't want it to be regulated. It'll, you know, as soon as something is regulated, then they, like the existing firms, then they suddenly have to put all their staff through training, the correct training, you know, it's an expensive process, and they don't want to be regulated, you know what I mean? Then they suddenly have to abide by the laws, and they're not going to make as much money as well. So, and as well, in the same breath, I'm not nothing against estate agents, but they don't want to have the property inspected. They don't want to lose out on a potential sale because there's defects. So estate agents are not trying to push this inspection thing on buyers. What should actually be happening is that the estate agents say to the buyer, look, you can't sell this property without an inspection. That should, in a sense, be the law behind this whole lot, because sometimes the buyer can't even afford to go and have the inspection done, but it is so crucial. So I think it must be driven from not only from government side, but also through the estate agents themselves to try and protect the buyer. And in terms of exemption, I'm not saying at all that architects need to be completely exempt from this lot. That inspectors as a whole must be, and it's important that this bill regulates them. All that I'm saying is, in terms of architects themselves, we are already have oversight by SACAP, which is already has oversight from the Council for the Built Environment, and we are at the helm of that whole industry. We are at the top of the building profession. So for us to go and do another course would kind of be futile. So all I would say is that we would have to be exempt from those additional fees, not being exempt from the laws which this bill would impose.
Do you see yourself or your company offering a service to the vulnerable property consumer? Or, I'm just asking, look, this sector is driven by profit, generally. I think you said so yourself. Now, I'm asking a straightforward question. Do you see yourself offering a service to a vulnerable property consumer or a disadvantaged property consumer?
Absolutely, yes. Look, we want to bridge the gap across the board, across the spectrum, but at grassroots level, that's where it's important. And actually, most of our clients have been people that have bought a little apartment, you know, or even someone that's bought an RDB house from someone else and they needed it inspected, but the wall was falling over, you know what I mean, and that drove the price down so yes, we do, and we do try to cover all walks of life.
Ashishak, we note what you've raised. Remember, all the proposals of amendments that are being raised, the department is noting them, and at a certain point they will be coming back to respond to us as the members of parliament one by one. So it's still a process. So be able to watch the space, because when that time, when the committee says the department is coming to respond, we are free to come back and sit here and listen to that meeting. Thank you so much. I'm told that Adams and Adams were in the old venue, so they have walked in, so they are here, because we have already cancelled them. I'm told they are here now, because I was about to go to the next presentation. If they can come here to sit where the gentleman is going to move now. We don't need the whole delegation. We need the people that are going to present. The chairs are four. So if you are more than four, we are not going to be able to accommodate you, all of you. And the presentation is 15 minutes. And then 15 minutes is for debate. If you can come closer. If you can just press the speak on the mic, and then.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Apologies for being late. And thank you for the opportunity to present. As already indicated, I'm Andre Fisser from Addison Adams. We represent the services sector, CETA. And the proposal or the submission that we want to make is fairly succinct, and it relates to the bill's references to authority for training and the disbursement of grants. So those are the two aspects that I want to make submissions around. Just as background, the services CETA is the services sector training of education and training authority. That is a statutory body that is set up in terms of the Skills Development Act. The Skills Development Act obviously is a mechanism in terms of which revenue collected through the Skills Development Levy is allocated specifically for training and education purposes, and the services CETA is in control of the disbursement of those funds, and specifically in respect of the role allocated to them, the allocation of funds in the property sector. In terms of Section 3 of the Property Practitioners Bill, specific reference is made to the fact that one of the roles of the board to be established in terms of the Act would be to provide training in respect of the various classes of property practitioners that are identified. Unfortunately, the Act does not expand on what exactly that would entail and how it will be done. And it is our submission, Madam Chair, that that is directly in conflict with the provisions of the Skills Development Act and the role that the CETA is intended to play in respect of the disbursement of skills development levies. In addition to that, the proposed Section 38 of the bill similarly provides for granting funds or making grants available in respect of training, which again directly conflicts with the role that is already assigned to the CETA in respect of the making of grants to, amongst others, property practitioners insofar as skills development is concerned. So to try and put this into a nutshell, the concern is firstly that there is not enough demarcation in respect of who will fulfill which roles in terms of the education and training. Just to give you a historical background, as you are aware, in terms of the current Estate Agents Board and its functions, the Act there does provide for a certain amount of oversight in respect of training, and that has already created significant practical issues in respect of the interaction between the CETA and the Estate Agents Board. Fortunately, they've managed to reach agreement in respect of how that should be allocated, so they are currently working in accordance with that agreement, which for now works fine. The concern is that if the new Act is promulgated, that agreement will fall away, and there would be significant confusion as to which roles should be fulfilled by which party, and the agreement that's already been reached with the Estate Agents Board will obviously no longer be applicable. So to avoid confusion, it is our submission that the different roles be specifically allocated. Second concern, which I think is quite obvious, is the potential of double dipping by property practitioners who will be entitled both to grants in terms of the Property Practitioners Act as well as under the relevant CETA provisions, which would, in our view, have the unintended consequence that property practitioners may actually be advantaged above other groups of professionals who would not necessarily have the same ability to be able to benefit in both ways. to try and propose a way of dealing with this, it is our submission that obviously the board needs to look after its professionals and need to have insight in respect of what qualifications they should be. However, the actual qualifications themselves and what that entail and how that is provided, in our view, is something that should be within the powers of the services CETA specifically, and that professional matters such as admission exams, etc., to the profession could obviously reside with the board, so that there's a clear distinction as to who is responsible for what education and training. Obviously, there will have to be interface between the CETA and the board in respect of those matters. But it's our submission that it needs to be made clear to avoid this potential conflict. The services CETA has spent a huge amount of time, effort and money in respect of already producing training and related programs, including for property practitioners, as they would now be defined. The work has been done. They spend a lot of time and energy in making sure that the education is in line with international norms and standards, and therefore it is it's not clear how the board will step in and try and either duplicate or reinvent the wheel, so to speak, in respect of that training and education. So that, Madam Chairman, in broad, is the submission.
Thank you very much. So, Mr. Fesser, you are coming from Adams, which is the legal firm.
That is correct.
Which is, you are here representing services sector.
That is correct.
Okay. And I want to assume that she didn't get to introduce herself, so she's also from Adams and Adams.
She is not.
No, I'm not from Adams. I'm not an attorney. I am the chairperson at the Services CETA of the Real Estate and Related Services Chamber. So within CETA, there are different subsectors. One subsector, very large and important subsector, being real estate. And I chair that chamber.
So you are a board member?
I'm a board member of the Services CETA as well, yes, and I chair the chamber of the real estate.
Okay. So you know why I'm asking the question? Because you are sitting with Adams and Adams.
Yes. We got our advice from when the bill came out. We voiced our concerns as the board. And our board chairperson at the time then elected that we actually get a good firm of attorneys to put our case in a legal and a proper manner. And that's why we have done it that way.
So you are sitting there representing the board?
I'm both representing the board of the services CETA,
but
yes.
I want it to be
and the real estate chamber.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's the presentation from Adams and Adams, representing the services CETA. They have some concerns. The draft of the bill, I'm assuming they don't have issues with it. The only issue that they have is that there is not enough demarcation on the working relations, particularly between the services CETA and the new body that will be formed. They have a working relationship with EAAB at the moment, which they don't know where it will take them once the bill is properly passed. I think that I'm correct, Mr. Andrew?
Madam Chairman, yes, that is a correct summary of our submission.
Thank you very much. Honorable Malak.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to check with them, particularly with regards to the training aspect, whether your position is entirely oppositional to the bill covering up, you know, training, or whether you have proposals in terms of what kind of training should be, because you've also hinted at the fact that there isn't sufficient demarcation as to whether you are opposed to having the bill include some aspect of training, and whether that should be the sole function of the services CETA. so that we can get a clear sense of your position, because to say that there isn't enough demarcation, but I don't get the sense that you are advocating for more clarity, and whether that clarity would include the training aspect residing where is it now, or having a clearly defined one so that the bill can be absolutely clear in terms of what the new body would be able to come. And secondly, with regards to, in fact, yeah, I just limited to that, Chair, holistically, because I don't think it was a clumsy use of words in the bill to include training, but I want to get the sense from you as the authority that, you know, in the industry perform some function over training as to where do you see the compatibility, or whether you are looking for absolute placement of the training function being where they are now, and for the bill to not have any aspect of that.
I guard my position in all the power. Welcome, Honorable Stolle. You wanted to speak, Honorable Barbara? Okay. We do, because what we do, we take all the questions and you answer one.
Chair, in the submission on page 2, the issue that has been raised is actually two questions around the education part, and I think on the finances part. But I wanted to check, is it a question, just a question of the concern, is it a question of semantics? If I say provide for education and provide education, would it be understood in the same light? And because from the submission, that is part and parcel of my understanding the problem might lie with. If we provide education or we provide for education, would that be part and parcel of it? The finances part of it will come afterwards anyway.
Good question. Thank you very much. I do want to state this up front, particularly because there's a board member that is sitting next to Mr. Fesser, who is representing Adams and Adams. I do have a sense of discomfort for the fact that Services CEDA is a government entity, and it has got all the right to come and present itself to Parliament, and it has got all the right because intergovernmental relations allow them to do that. And this process is a process that seeks to build the relationship. And I really do want to put it on record that I fail to comprehend why Services CEDA couldn't come themselves to do the presentation to us rather than bring a legal company to do that. Even if Adams and Adams was advising them, but the presentation itself should have been done by Services CEDA. You understand what I'm trying to say? And I thought, Mr. Sleiman? Yeah. And I thought, Mrs. Neyman, if you can take that back to the board and do explain that we do have that sense of discomfort. The sense of discomfort stems from the fact that there are intergovernmental relations that govern all of us. And Parliament deals with all stakeholders in government. And Services CEDA is our family. And Services CEDA has got a right to come and say to us, we are unhappy with ABCD. And Services CEDA has got a right to commission Adams and Adams to help them to put what they are not happy with, but they must come and present it themselves. So I thought it's important for me to just say it up front. So, you see, the way it's done as if already there's a legal battle, and there is no legal battle. This is a consultation for the people of South Africa. It is about the transformation of the property sector. And I do want to actually say to you because I don't want to address myself to Andre, because Andre is a client of yours. But I do want to say to the board itself, maybe at some point you need to come back to the committee and actually come as services sitter and talk to us as services sitter, not as Adams and Adams. And I thought it's important for me to say that upfront. Because there are things that we would like to talk to you as a government entity, not true to Mr. Fesser, who is a little person. I thought it's important that we should say that. Thank you very much. But we note what you have raised, and we are not going to comment now. All that we want you to do, and we will write, we'll do it in writing as the committee, that Services Sitter has got all the right to interact with the Portfolio Committee of Human Settlement. At their earliest disposal, they must come and talk to us. Thank you very much. We are done. Thank you so much for your time. We are done. We are not even going to allow you to respond to the question. What we would want you to do is to, when you come back, we will then have a longer session with yourselves and have a discussion with yourselves. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Yeah. Thank you. Just from the Services Seekers Board side, thank you for that. We will take note.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
And we respect your opinion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That goes without saying, I would hope.
Real estate business owner of South Africa. We know you've given us a big presentation, but that doesn't change the fact that you still have 15 minutes. Yeah, I know. You even had presentation 6, you know, A, B. We appreciate it, but your time is still 15 minutes. Luckily, you know your presentation, so get into it.
We've put a lot of work into it, but as you've quite rightly pointed out yourself already, we can't possibly go through all of that right now. It would certainly not be possible. Our real point is this is an opportunity to move forward. Consumers must be protected. Transformation is imperative. More jobs must be created, and transformation without growth will not be good enough. It is important to use this opportunity to ensure that the industry transforms and grows, and I do hope that would be top of mind when your committee deliberates on the bill. The industry has to move forward. The danger is, of course, that one can easily perpetuate the status quo and even regress. There's not much in the bill that will enhance the opportunities of current and future estate agents in the industry, and in fact, very much that will actually hinder the same, we believe. We rely on the insight and expertise of this committee to see to that. The scope of the bill, in our opinion, is too wide. Too many diverse persons and enterprises are brought into the ambit of the authority's regulatory power. It, for example, will include, in our interpretation, caretakers of premises, land surveyors, bond consultants, and apparently property portals and even property papers. In fact, thousands of individuals will be affected. In drafting these notes, I often realize that important issues I'm raising now will affect those we refer to as estate agents today and not many individuals that are referred to as property practitioners in the bill. We believe they don't belong there. And that's why there are so many applications, I think, for exemptions, quite frankly, having heard the talks today. This is a step backwards, as the authority will have difficulty in coping with all that. The existing Estate Agency Affairs Board has difficulty regulating and policing the industry as it is. The EAB recently shared that almost 8,000 of the 22,000 candidate estate agents currently registered are serial candidates, i.e. they have exceeded the time period of 1 to 2 years to complete their internship. Here they are allowed to be candidates and many are operating illegally without the required supervision. That is half of the registered industry. It is reported that thousands more are operating entirely illegally. Last year in December, almost 2,000 agents were in danger of losing their right to trade due to various issues. It seems inappropriate to burden the authority of board with even more responsibility when one takes this into account. It is another step backwards to retain the exemption for attorneys. Attorneys can and will still be able to trade as property practitioners without complying with the same rules as estate agents, and I believe in order to obtain conveyancing work, to the detriment of the industry, if not the consumers as well. I have reason to believe that most of the conveyancing work generated through the offices of attorneys operating estate agencies are done by those very same attorneys. Developers seem not to be included in the definition, but should be. Yes, they are selling their own properties and employing salespeople, I might add, but at the same time are selling to consumers who should be protected. There is no reason why they should not be required to adhere to the same rules and regulations as property practitioners. This would be a step forward. Another step forward as far as the definition of a property practitioner is concerned would be to differentiate between different types of property practitioners, i.e. business property practitioners, managed by principal property practitioners, employing ordinary and candidate property practitioners. This differentiation is important because the bill currently reads that all property practitioners, that would be all four categories, must operate trust accounts, submit audit reports, audit businesses and trust accounts, be in possession of BE certificates, etc. It is obvious that all the latter should only apply to business property practitioners and not to the other three categories. Another step backwards is the retention of the stipulation that should even one director, member or trustee of a business property practitioner for whatever reason not be registered with the authority, the entire business and all the ordinary candidate property practitioners working for the business be deregistered at the same time. The prejudice to the business and in particular to the individuals is immense. And they are often most unaware of this even happening until it's too late and income is forfeited. The equivalent to this in general terms would be that should one director of, for example, Absa Bank be deemed unfit as a director, the bank have to close its doors immediately. This is absurd, and with the eye on growth and transformation, it just cannot stand. The establishment of an ombud is a step forward, but there are challenges with overlapping jurisdictions that will have to be addressed. It will take too long to touch on that today. The stipulations regarding the appointment of the board of the authority is also a step backwards. Currently, industry is assured of one-third of board members being practicing estate agents, but this number is potentially dramatically reduced in the bill. It is difficult to imagine how the authority can really execute its duties without having an ear to the ground. An alternative would be to have a permanent consultative body in which all representative bodies in the industry can participate to ensure that the authority does consult with industry regularly. Thanks to Madam Chair, there is such a body, the multi-stakeholder group, in place at the moment, although we are called together on an ad hoc basis and at the convenience of the EAB and by the EAB. Thanks, Madam Chair. I can assure you this has been very beneficial to the industry over the past number of years. For the first 6 months, give or take, of last year, there was no board. Apart from the obvious downside, consumers suffered because claims submitted to the Fidelity Fund could not be finalized for a very long time. It would be a step forward to ensure that only one-third of board members retire on a yearly basis, thereby always leaving two-thirds of the board in position to execute its duties and to carry forward experience gained in the process. On certificates, property practitioners currently and now in the bill have to be licensed to all be issued with Fidelity Fund certificates in order to trade. When this was put into the current act, fax machines did not even exist, and hard copies, embossed certificates which had to be displayed on the premises was the rule. In the bill, the words having been issued with are replaced by being in possession of a Fidelity Fund certificate, a huge difference and very problematic. A step forward would be to acknowledge that we have moved to a digital age and that certificates can be issued digitally and a data bank could be accessible to all consumers to check on the status of property practitioners. the technology is already practically in place. Instead of submitting a certified copy of a piece of paper to a conveyancer to ensure payment of commission as the bill now demands, which is a very good idea by the way, such conveyancer could easily access the data bank to determine the status of the property practitioner. Data is live, whereas paper, of course, dates the minute it is issued. Certified copies of withdrawn certificates can and will be presented easily and should rather not exist. It is also a step backwards to retain yearly registration of property practitioners, which causes bottlenecks at an already strained authority. A step forward would be to register a property practitioner once and retain same registration indefinitely, provided such practitioner keeps her records, fees, and attendance of necessary CPD courses up to date at the authority. One doesn't have to prove yearly that you're a teacher or a doctor, for example. It should be noted that the penalty for not having been issued with an FFC is not a small fine, but forfeiture of commission of the individual and sometimes the commission of the entire business. This can and did happen due to lack of service and negligence in the past. Much can be done to seamlessly allow property practitioners to resign from one business to join another without the current delay, loss of income, and paperwork.
1 minute left.
Gosh, I'll try. A backward step in the bill that affects the employment of candidate property practitioners is the notion that a principal is responsible for anything that a candidate might do, even without the principal being aware of that. It is like taking responsibility with no qualification for somebody else's life. Of course, candidates must be given guidelines, etc. And not getting rid of this clause can actually lead to the resignation or the firing of 22,000 candidates because no principal would like to take the responsibility for them. The same applies to franchisors, as the bill is making the franchisor responsible for everything the franchisee does. And the franchisee is actually a different legal entity, and once again, the franchisor will never take that risk. And this is a huge negative because franchising allows a smaller operator to compete by using a brand with other big brands. More importantly, transformation of the real estate industry is overdue and imperative. Transformation, however, is not only existing businesses doing the necessary to obtain the required BEE status. It is also the enabling of the individuals to start and manage their own businesses. Many of the big national companies in South Africa today started in garages or at home. In this instance, the bill really fails in its objective. Small agencies are so important. Individuals working for themselves in their own firms, that is, sole proprietors or family businesses, must have trust accounts, albeit most often dormant, and must have that account audited, as you've heard this morning, by a chartered accountant at a huge cost. Trust accounts should be optional. The authority granted by the minister to exempt is not adequate. Same principal practitioner must have a business account audited by a chartered accountant or at another huge cost, whereas other small businesses in South Africa can rely on reviews, as was mentioned this morning.
Go to your recommendation.
I'm actually in that, Madam Chair. The next one is money matters, for example. It is clear that the board charges at the moment a new principal registering 1,000 Rand more than what it charges an employee agent at another firm. What I'm trying to show here is this cannot be justified because if we want to promote small businesses, we must enable the individual small business to be able to compete with the bigger ones. Same principle, let's pay 500 Rand more per annum for CPD training. It would be a step forward if we can do that. Sorry, I'm skipping some notes now to get to your deadline. The principal sole proprietor competing with an employed ordinary property practitioner faces many more challenges and having to cover a lot more expenses than the employed agent. Consider bank charges, two audit fees. Important here. I predict that should the bill not address this, we will end up with big conglomerates controlling the market instead of thousands of entrepreneurs working for themselves and building businesses, any one of which could become one of the biggest agencies in South Africa. Black agents are compelled to work for bigger white-owned businesses as there are not that many black-owned businesses yet, instead of working for themselves. Addressing this would be a step forward. My last paragraph. It will also be a step forward to allow business to have directors that don't necessarily have to be qualified property practitioners fulfilling specific functions like finance, marketing, human resources, etc. This will, amongst other things, enhance transformation as it will enable black entrepreneurs who want to enter the industry as shielders and directors to do so without necessarily training as property practitioners and doing a year doing so, spending a year doing so. In summary, Madam Chair, the definitions and scope are too wide, the appointment of the board must be addressed, issuing of Fidelity Fund certificates can be streamlined and that's made much easier and safer. The position of interns and franchisees must be addressed because it will be really very detrimental, and most importantly, it must enable small businesses in order to realize effective transformation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Leroux. I couldn't be sure listening to you whether there is one section of the bill that you are happy with. So maybe just let me know so that I don't summarize negatively. But when I was listening to you, the whole bill, you are not happy with it. Just confirm that for me.
Madam Chair, with a few exceptions, yes, I did try and touch on the ombud scheme and all the clauses around that. That's better. The inspections are better. I didn't have time now to get to that. So the ombud is a step in the right direction, but it is a limited step.
So in your own, I just want, before I give the members, remember we are repealing an act of 1976, which was not created for the benefit of the majority of the South Africans.
True.
It's a fact.
True.
It has benefited the minority of the South Africans.
Great.
And this bill, what it seeks to do is to try and open up those doors to make sure that at least now other people get in. That's one of the reasons why black estate agents are still working for the big white estate agents. True? Right. Now, in your own understanding, therefore, are you saying it's better to sit with the 1976 bill as it is, or because as it is, what we are trying to repeal doesn't seem like we are on the right track?
Madam Chair, not at all. I started by saying we support the cancellation of the existing act because it's very defective. But I dare say that every clause that I've criticized in the bill is directly from the old act. I'm criticizing repeated clauses of the old act when I criticize. The ombud is a new thing, for example. Very happy. In principle.
In principle. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Leroux. This is the Real Estate Business Owners of South Africa. Note, Real Estate Business Owners of South Africa. Any comments? Or questions? Yes, Honorable Malatsi. Yes, Honorable Mabe. Anybody else who wants to take? And welcome, Honorable Stoney. We know that in the morning you were in a public works. We missed you. Welcome. Thank you very much. Can I have the two?
Thanks, Chair. I'm trying to reconcile the statements you made towards the end of your presentation regarding the your sentiment that the bill as is would perpetuate the current landscape where you're having like the established industry players continue to dominate the market, and as a result, you know, the new entrants into the market are the ones that the chairperson indicated to you as part of the efforts to open up the industry, that it will become increasingly difficult for small or emerging enterprises to actually compete in the with what the bill actually is trying to do. So I just want to get your sense in terms of your submission as to how do you view transformation as encapsulated by this bill, because I think it's at the core of what the entire submission is about. And the other stuff, I think, for me, are more procedural, you know, issues. I mean, in your submission, you elaborate extensively with regards to the appointment of the board, you know, the powers of the inspection. Those, I think, for me, are not make or break issues in there. But I just want to get the sense in terms of what, in line with your submission, your organization, how do you view transformation of the industry? Not in broad terms, but, you know, in line with your submission to the bill. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mabe.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, man. I'm still traumatized by the CETA's approach, you know, on this issue. To bring attorneys while we just starting to negotiate, it means the war is really coming, and it's big. Chair, through you, pardon my ignorance. Through you, Chair, can I first check with the with Mr. LaRue, when we talk real estate, who are we talking about?
You talk Pam Golding. You know the big guns. Those are the real. You can name them, Mr. LaRue. Pam Golding. Who else?
And 500 other small firms.
No, but name the big ones. Name the big ones.
Yes, all the big ones are there.
All the five big ones are there.
And the 500 smaller ones. And many black ones.
Okay.
For the benefit of the committee, just name the five people.
That's why I said, pardon my ignorance, you know, because...
Well, if I now list them, then I'll be in trouble as to who's the biggest, but you're on the right track.
At least the top five.
Are they definitely members? The top 25 in South Africa are actually members. The top 25 biggest firms are members, I suppose.
All right. Now, Chair, I'm also pleased by the fact that he's also supporting the transformation part of the bill, if I heard him correctly. One thing that really disturbed me as well is that he was just talking to a presentation that is full of photos. I don't know, maybe somewhere there's a print document, but we just had photos with no information attached to it. I don't know why is that. The whole presentation, unless if my I missed something somewhere. I apologize if that's the case.
The file. There is one with photos, but there is one with
words,
man.
Okay. No, I apologize. But I mean, even on the slide.
Too many words and too little words. I can't win.
No. You are not being criticized.
No, I'm enjoying.
This is just an engagement. All that we're trying to do. Remember, the reality of the situation, Mr. Luru, is that you are representing deep business.
And
don't run away from that.
No, I do.
You are representing big business. The small business that you are representing are not even 50% of your company, of your organization. Let's just be realistic about that. So obviously, what you will be presenting to us is going to be the interest of the big business. And it's normal. I can come and talk here and talk what I don't represent. So it's just a normal, you don't even have to be apologetic about that. All that we need to do is just how then do we engage to make sure that we find a middle ground. There is absolutely nothing wrong with your presentation because you are representing the people that are in your company. It's normal. So don't feel bad. So obviously, this side would then look at it and want to ask questions that would want to benefit those that are not represented by yourself. That's what it's trying to do. Now, the issue here is that two questions have been asked, but for me, you see, your presentation is using so many words that have got negative connotations. For instance, you say, not much to allow for change, the bill, there's not much to allow for change. And then you say, the way you look at it, it looks like it's a step backward. And then you say, it's supposed to be an opportunity to move forward. So you see those words, for somebody like me sitting here, they get muddled in my brain. My brain is a very sensitive brain. Now, what then needs to happen is that we need to find a middle ground. The middle ground here is that we are talking about a property practitioner's bill, which in its essence is a transformation bill. In its essence, it is a transformation bill. Now, obviously then, if we are going to be talking about a bill that is a transformation bill, which seems to be threatening the big business, there's going to be a sense of discomfort. Now, what is important is that in our engagement is to then ensure and reassure you that the essence of the bill is not meant to make the big business discomfort. All that it must happen, the bill must open up so that the property sector is not a sector that is managed and controlled by a few, which is what is currently happening. Now, the reality of the situation is that in South Africa, the property sector is worth about 7.6 trillion. That's the reality. And out of that, only 4% of black people are participating in that sector. Now, these are the realistic things. Now, this bill, as it is trying to see what is it that we can do to open up. And I admire the fact that you've been very open with some of the things that you are uncomfortable with. And what is needed here is, how then do we make sure that we meet each other halfway? And Rebosa comes to the party to assist the property practitioners bill to come to fruition, and the previously disadvantaged South Africans benefit in this sector. And for me, that's what we need. So some of the things that you would raise, that you would see as obstacles, are things that we should all of us work towards making sure that we resolve. But don't put obstacles in front as if the bill must not be enacted. Because then, in a sense, you are saying the status quo must remain. And the status quo is not going to remain. That's the reality that we must deal with now. We are dealing with transformation, and it is not going to be the same. We have to make sure that somehow we found each other, we are able to deal with this issue. So for me, that's just what I wanted to say. I know I've engaged with you before, and I know...
I hope it's not the last time.
And I know we are still going to engage. All I'm just saying is that let's try and have an open mind and make sure that as we build the new body, we all agree. EAP has had its challenges. But remember, this is the body that we found it as it is, put together by the 1976 bill. We are bringing a new bill. Why don't you give an opportunity for this new body to come and say these are the things that we think we can improve, rather than putting a red pen from page 1 to page 20.
May I respond, Madam?
No, Mr. LaRue, I want you, you're going to respond. I want you to respond.
Thank you very much.
Because you see, the whole, for me, the whole purpose is those red pens, at least let's now try and find a neutral ground to make sure that now that you've put the red, what can be done? I think for me, come to the solution.
Right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, quite a few points.
Chair,
you've
before I respond, I was on the floor then where you hijacked me.
Oh, I thought you were finished.
No, I wasn't.
You were traumatized, that's why.
I
sorry.
Was traumatized.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find myself.
Sorry.
What captured me in these pictures, because pictures also send messages. I don't know, they're not numbered, but it's the one that says it is totally unjustified to hold one person responsible for the behavior of another person. And then who's the author there is Victor Franklin. I don't know what does that mean. Maybe if you can elaborate on that.
Exactly.
Then the second most interesting one is the one that says transformation, going beyond change. And I see a caterpillar changing to a pupa, then a butterfly. Why don't you use a cheetah? Because for me, if you use a butterfly as an example for transformation, it means you're saying you're going nowhere. Maybe next time, the next presentation, you should use a cheetah, because we're talking about radical economic transformation. So our people are waiting, and you are not going to decide for them. Parliament, unfortunately, is going to take that decision, because what works for you, unfortunately, doesn't work for the majority. I think the chair is covered. It's fine. Let me pause for now. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Leroux.
May I, Madam Chair?
Yes.
First of all, I'm so sorry. I think it's more in my communication than in the facts that I'm presenting. 2.5 pages of my 7 pages is actually all about small business and definitely not protecting the status quo. And in fact, I would like to challenge anyone, if there's anything in my presentation that protects big business, there's not one clause that I'm aware about that says, please protect the status quo. When you read me as being negative, I'm very positive about changing the Act, because it really is defective. It has to be replaced. My objection, and that's why the list is so long, Madam Chair, is that so much in the new bill is an absolute rewash of the old bill, and it's not changing it. It is just perpetuating it. So I'm positive in the sense it has to change. I'm negative in the way of saying, but if we change it to exactly what it was, we haven't changed it. That's really what I'm trying to get across, and I apologize if I didn't put that well. Sorry, I made some rough notes here. To answer you quickly about the photographs, I misunderstood the presentation situation, because there were so many of our documents here. I thought this was just to aid me with visuals as to what I'm talking about. And I do take the point on the last speaker's note that a cheetah would have worked better. On the previous one, what is unjustified about being responsible for somebody else was my talk about the franchisor cannot be responsible for what the franchisee does. They will not be franchising anymore. And the principal cannot be responsible for what the candidate estate agent does when he's not in sight. That will be the end of all of that. So one person can't be responsible for another. We must all be responsible for ourselves. That's all the picture was supposed to mean. Just incidentally, of course, the entire value of all the properties in South Africa is 7 trillion plus, but the market is actually 2.6 billion big, because that's the volume of sales per year. So it is big, but it's not 7 trillion, not that it matters that much. Same as the old. Oh, then the transformation, that question, the first one, that if I remember it correctly. Those 2.5 pages of my speech is all about saying there are two ways of transforming this industry. One is to have the current businesses, and I mentioned it in my talk here, adhere to the BE, the charter, and doing the right thing and getting it done. That's one part of transformation. And as important a part, if not bigger, is making sure that small business can start and thrive. I've been an agent for 35 years, and it was always easy to start a small business, and most of the agencies in South Africa are small family businesses. There are 7,000 of them in total, and you know about the Big Five, or you keep mentioning the Big Five. There are 7,000. So this is an industry that's ideally positioned to create jobs for small people, for people in their own right or in small family businesses to thrive. All the Act has done, and the application that the EAB lent to it over the past number of years, and what the bill is now perpetuating, is to make it tougher and tougher and more impossible for small businesses to get off the ground, and it drives the small entrepreneur into the hands of the big conglomerates. That is what my speech about, exactly the opposite of protecting the big ones. It is attacking the big ones. It's opening the doors. And I gave practical examples there. It is wrong that a small business should have to have a trust account and have it ordered by a chartered accountant, where, according to our figures, 70% of them don't use it. 70% of 7,000 firms' trust accounts, if the fee for that audit is 5,000 Rand, it's 24 million. If it's 10,000 Rand, it's 50 million a year that's taken from small operators that could be put to better use. The CPD fees, why must a principal black estate agent, and I'm using it exactly to make a point, pay 2,500 Rand for CPD, but a white agent working for Pam Golding Estates pays 2,000 Rand. There's a difference in fees. The agent who works for Pam Golding Estates pays much less, 1,000 Rand less to register as a new agent for Pam Golding versus the black entrepreneur who runs his own business. So I was making all the points to say one of our big solutions in transformation is opening the doors for small business. The Pam Goldings of the world that we all mentioned started in garages and at home, and that is part of what we must make happen. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Little, thank you very much. You see, it's not a thumbs back that the property sector is worth 7.4 trillion. It's not a thumbs back.
It's not what?
It's worth 7.4 trillion. It's something that is out there. It's researched. What you are saying is that
you're making the property sector makes about 2.6 billion property in sales. That doesn't make it worth 2.6 billion. Hope you understand what I'm trying to say. But the whole value of the property sector in this country is 7.4 trillion. That's a reality. You can check the State of the Nation address of the President of this country. That's what he had mentioned. You can even check the State SA. That's what is said. The point here is that on that 7.4 trillion, black estate agents are not even in the 1 trillion. That's it. They are not even in this 2.6 billion you're talking about. That's the reality. So that's why we, sitting here, all of us with you sitting here, we are trying to have this conversation, because all that you are trying to do is how do we transform this sector? The reality is that, for instance, here in Cape Town, there are areas that black estate agents cannot sell houses. That's just the truth of the matter. In Waterfall, where I live in Joburg, a black estate agent cannot sell a house. You need first to have 100,000 to pay to be able to be allowed. That's just the reality. And that already means you are closing the black estate agents out, because that person wouldn't have 100,000 just to get in. So all that you are trying to do here is, how then do we make sure Pam Golding's 100,000 is a drop in the water, in the ocean? They can pay it with eyes closed. Like that. So that's what we are talking about. It's not even about trying to make you uncomfortable. The disparities are too glaring. And therefore, we must start having these conversations openly, without anybody being uncomfortable, so that you are able to find solutions, all of us. It is just a reality. Those black agents, state agents that you are talking about, even in your company, Rebusa, they are selling in certain areas, but not in other areas. How do we make sure that we open up this market? And this bill is trying to do that. That's all. And I appreciate, for me, because for instance, I can ask you a very simple question. This 2.6 billion that you're talking about, that is made in sales in a year, how much commission is made by black estate agents from that money?
A minute percentage, Madam Chair.
No, I'm just saying. I'm not asking you to give me the exact amount. I'm just trying to say you would discover that it's not even at 10%.
I think it's less.
Yes, it's less. So so the reality, therefore, is that it is needed to have this conversation.
Yes.
And it is needed to all of us to try and find solutions and make sure that in the process we find each other. Where we see that there is a weakness, bring a solution rather than criticize. Say, I think we must do this here. That's all I'm saying. I'm not even criticizing your input. All I'm saying is that rather have a more proactive, constructive input which says, I think this is what could be done to make the bill more transformative. And this is what I think Rebusa could do to assist black estate agents to actually enter the space. This is what I think Rebusa can commit in making sure that we train more. That's all I'm saying. I'm not even trying to be I'm not even there, because sooner or later, when I leave Parliament, I would want to be trained by you to be an estate agent. You know what I mean?
I'm too old for that. Yeah,
so I'm just saying, at the end of the day, so I wouldn't want to make you angry, because I'm going to need you tomorrow. Because the reality, you still control this sector. Not you as an individual, but you still control. This sector is in your hands. That's what we want to do here, is to actually make sure that this sector is in everybody's hands. That's all we want to do. That's just what we want. So for me, we're quite happy. We're happy with your input, but there's still a lot of things. There's a conversation that must continue. We need to talk more.
I would very much like that.
Yes. We still owe each other coffee.
Lunch, rather.
And lunch and dinner.
There you go.
Yes. Because we need to continue with this conversation.
I would love to. Thank
yes.
you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Very eye-opening and important presentation. We are now on the National Property Practitioners. Good afternoon, sir. Welcome to the chair. Not to the chair, me, to that chair that you are sitting on, of
yeah.
presenters.
thank you, chair. After the previous presentation, you might forgive me. Let me introduce myself. My name is Mlambo Leo from National Property Forum. National Property Forum is a Section 21 organization primarily set up but represent black estate agents. We have a membership of plus minus 1,000 across 6 of our country's 9 provinces. We set up this organization in 2010 and I must comment, Madam Chair, but we are excited about this bill. We have been singing this song, a transformation, for a long time. Some of us have lost a lot within the process. Come on, our newspapers to try and say transformation needs to happen. We are sometimes called very radical, but I think the time has come now. So we did it. I must apologize that we didn't have enough time but look at this bill in totality. However, there are certain points that we would like to raise that are burning issues that are important for us. Because the state of the industry, in the presentation that I sent you, is that there's nothing that has happened in terms of transformation. And when I say nothing, I mean exactly that. Nothing has happened in terms of transformation. Because when you talk about, let me look at the issue of training, for example. Millions of rands have been spent with training via this, with all due respect, the services, CETA, and other organizations issuing money for training. And I'll give you an example. I also took about 50 interns. It was in 2016. I ended up with 30-something interns. All they were waiting for was a stipend, say 1,500 a month. After the stipend was gone, they disappeared out of sight. And millions were spent in funding trainers to ensure that these people are trained. There's no result, Madam Chair. There's a disjuncture between the aim and the result. And therefore, if this bill does not address those things, then you will have let us down in terms of transformation once more. For us, as National Property Forum, there are a few factors that we are looking at. Number one, we realize that the issue of triple BEE is very important, and it should be in the bill. However, it should not be our aim that it is the ultimate end. Then I've arrived, I can be rich. But what about the issue of these young children that are coming out of schools, that are not employed, that we could put into this industry? How do we solve that? Does that issue of a triple BEE is all right. We support it. But we want to ensure that when we bring our children into this industry to train, they are not there temporarily for a year so that somebody else can make money, and then they are thrown onto the street again. I'll give you a typical example, Madam Chair. I won't be long. One of the children that were in, when I call them children because they are young, that were doing interns with Kampanyam, they would tell me about this 1,500 that we're getting is feeding abundantly. It's feeding my family. And yet, we've been, as National Property Forum, backing to say, government, please intervene for us. Why can't we have a structured training system that says, we're Namlambo, take 20 of these students, we will pay them for the first 6 months a proper amount of support, hypothetically 6,000 rand for each one of them. And then again, we look at other government departments like Public Works and other, where have their properties, support these children whilst they're training, give them leads, let them get used to the industry. After 6 months, they are now ready to sell. They won't run away from the industry. We're creating a principal. We're creating employment. We preached this thing for a long time with government. Don't waste money by giving it. If you look at the amount of money that has been spent, I think it's millions. Look at what I'm talking about, 6,000 rands per student of 20. That's how much, 120,000 times. Look at 6 months. And at the same time, give us those leads. Government has got properties. Developments are there. We've got regulations that we can say to the banks, before you give money to this developer, ensure that a percentage of those properties are sold by these trainees. Why can't we do that? That's my question. National Property Forum have sent me here to come and say, don't preach Tatumlambo, but tell them what we think. But I suppose preaching is part of my nature. Let's look at the bill as it talks to trust accounts. A figure was mentioned of about 70% that don't use trust accounts. Our view is that 99% of black estate agents don't use trust accounts. About needy, they don't want them. Their monies go to lawyers. As I speak, I've got agents that when there is a cash deal, it goes to the lawyer, then the lawyer does everything, pays us the commission, that's it. Why is there a need for those trust accounts? We are proposing that businesses that make less than 1.5 million annual gross commission turnover shouldn't have trust accounts, right? And therefore, business accounts, because if you look at business accounts, Zama PDIs, they are also used as transactional accounts. We buy our stuff from there, we do that. Those can be audited. However, we believe that it's only here, maybe in this country, where a CC is supposed to be audited by a chartered accountant. The company, I don't know whether it gives us that leeway to say, can't we audit this differently, the business accounts? Trust account, I make less than 1.5. You mentioned the property industry value. You mentioned someone was saying maybe 10%. 10% is too high, Madam Chair, of that money that was made by black agents. We've gone around the country asking agents, hands up those that make a million rands a year. None of them could lift up their hands. It's a critical situation. All right. we also believe that this needs to be looked at. The issue of trust accounts needs to be looked at. Madam Chair, I'm rushing because it was on BAM. We also believe strongly that if you look at the bill as it is, it mentions somebody described as a property practitioner. It includes attorneys, sheriffs, as well as developers. Our view is that why should an attorney sell property? That's my point. Why should they sell? Why should a developer sell property, the one that he develops? And what they do in most cases, with all due respect, is that they get their family members or somebody else to sell those properties. Thereby, transformation is not. Those kind of people should be develop and employ our interns, black interns, to sell those properties. Why should they double dip? That's our view. It could be something different. But if you look at the bill as it says a sheriff there on DD, I'm reading here, sheriff is defined in Section 1 of the Sheriff's Act. It A of this definition, irrespective of whether or not he or she has been ordered by a court of law to do so. It's opening up the industry for sheriffs to act as agents. So, we are born, I guess, in that instance, then everybody else becomes an agent, and they close down the road to transformation. Madam Chair, I've spoken about trust accounts that we believe, as National Property Forum, they should be optional. We also believe that the accounting records are necessary. We agree. We need to have accounting records. And there needs to be an optional situation that we look into in terms of the current costs of this accounting, of accounting. There were a presentation from Iribaye and anybody in the South African Institute of SAICA. And the elephant in the room was the cost of this audit. You cannot imagine that a black, and this is the reality, a black estate agent can spend 4 or 5 months anga one property. And then you say to yourself, at the end of that, he must go and pay 2,000 rand for a CPD, he must pay 5,000 rand for the audit, he must pay that amount for something else. Where are they going to get the money? We are closing down these people. And for me, my colleagues, Batebo and Apa, there must be an amnesty for non-registered agents. I agree with that, but an amnesty without policing the industry is pointless. We have to ensure that we police the industry, we educate our people, we ensure that our people are able to access this industry, so that an amnesty has been done before, I think, if I'm not mistaken. It was done before. When I was still a board member at the State Agents Affairs Board, amnesty was done. Where at that time, Gebedem Chair, we fought for transformation. Guess what budget we were given for transformation? I was in Transformation Committee, 130,000. You can't transform like that. The authority that is coming into play must be compelled to have a transformation agenda. Last but not least, this bill talks about a fund, transformation fund. Our view is that without enforcement, it won't happen. There needs to be a system where we agree that a certain percentage of the turnover of the big business, must be paid to this fund. And this fund must be administered by the industry and small business to ensure that it does the right thing. If we say they must do it voluntarily, it will almost be like the BE charter, which is a voluntary. That's my presentation, Madam Chair. Good news, but I'm going to tell you to account.
Thank you, Mr. Mlambo. You've said exactly what is needed. I think we understood exactly what you wanted to say, but the thrust of the presentation is that there is a need for this bill, because as one representing the National Property Forum, the industry is not transformed. That's the bottom line. Let me allow honorable members to to ask questions or clarities. We've got a new member, Honorable Triani, there. Don't you want to ask any question there, Honorable Triani? That's just pulling your leg. Honorable Khara, if you want to say something, anybody else that I must note? Honorable Stolle and Honorable Malak.
Honorable Chair, thanks very much for the presentation. It's a question to Mr. Mlambo. You believe after this process and the Parliament passes this bill, which we enact, you think it will really address the transformation in the sector? What do you suggest that the CETA must do more to assist in a permanent job for the young people and the interns?
Which CETA? Services CETA?
Yeah.
Which one are you talking about?
I'm talking about the CETA that is playing a role in this sector.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to apologize to be late because I started in the House now. There was a motion for the president, for our president. So now I have to attend that offense. Yes, 90th birthday, yes. Man, I'm sure I'm going to have a birthday. Okay. Chairperson, no, my question is just one question that I want to find out from the presenter, the numbers of illegally practitioners, if they do have that number of practitioners, because he says he represents all the unregistered practitioners.
Honorable Malak, I'm not sure whether you spoke already.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to establish from the chairperson there whether membership of the organization is exclusively for black estate agents or not, and what's the logic behind that. And more importantly, I mean, I was very curious of the statements you made around, you know, the need for more transformation, and particularly with the relationship with the board and its your displeasure with, you know, the funding for transformation. I mean, the EAB has a program called One Learner, One Estate Agent. I just wanted to get your views on that program. Whether it has, you know, played any contribution in filling the transformation gap. And lastly, from your experience and expertise in the industry, when it comes to the question of amnesty, I mean, you've cited that, you know, and I've also seen some literature alluding to the fact that there was a period where there was amnesty in the past. But I want to get the sense from you as to whether you think that is the way to go in order to get to this new legislative regime that this bill is proposing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable members. Mr. Mlambo, just for me, just two questions, nothing much. You've already mentioned the issue of a need for structured training, which I think is exactly more or less what Honorable Malaz is raising, which in essence explains your unhappiness in how the training has been done before and how it is not yielding the required effect. But maybe talk to us more about how you see the Transformation Fund and how do you see it working? I'm interested in your views. But also, you've been in this industry for some time. You are not rich yet. Yeah? Now, the big generally, I'm asking the question deliberately, because if you are an estate agent for a long time and you are in the big 25, you are a billionaire generally. Now, my question is, in your own understanding and your own analysis, do you feel that the big 25 have they played enough role to assist people like you in this industry? I'm asking you deliberately because you've been in this sector for some time. Do you think that the big 25 have assisted you in any way to actually make you a better person in this industry?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. Let me start by talking about answering the question on transformation concerning services, CETA, and training. I think the question was asked, how do I view that relationship between e-services CETA? Our organization supports the services CETA's efforts in training. Let's put it this way. They have played a role in training, and we support it. And we support the fact that there is a CETA that looks into training. That cannot be doubted. We support that. However, we believe that the way the training has been constructed is not satisfactory. We could be wrong, but we see it on the ground. We see it with these kind of things. And our view is that there needs to be a correlation between transformation and training and results. But the way we look at it, need to look at the results. What is it yielding? What is this money that we are putting in there giving us at the end? And I don't have the figures. I could be wrong, but I'm talking from my own agency. Out of all those 35 that I had, I remained with 4 that are still in the industry. And they're struggling. And believe you me, there needs to be a situation where we sit down and say, why we can't be putting money there when it's not working. Who is benefiting from it? At whose interest are we doing that? I'm sorry, this is an honest session. I have to be very honest about what's happening out there. It's very, 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 very frightening, the situation that's happening out there. All right, the other thing that I wanted to talk to the Honorable here, I represent a black estate agents, but not illegal practitioners. I just want to correct that. The issue of illegal practitioners, I'm not excusing it. The regulatory framework has forced some of them to be illegal. And because there is not much policing done, they will remain illegal. And the attorneys themselves are taking that business. And it's dangerous to the consumer, let's face it. So illegal practitioners will be a reality until this we correct it within this bill and this act. And I'm very sure of that we can correct it using this bill and this act. Hence, Kalen, I said, I support amnesty, right? I support, but amnesty has been done before. And we still are back to where we are now. I support amnesty, but we need to support amnesty together with this bill which has turned into an act that can help us so that it removes AMA barriers to entry that ensure that people become illegal wakona. If you understand what I'm saying. Because when you put in too much to the small business, then they can't afford to comply. Then what do? They become illegal. Right. Madam Chair, you asked about the One Learner, or was it you or one of the honorables, about the One Learner program. If you want my honest opinion, it hasn't worked. and that's an honest opinion from my side. I could be wrong. The One Learner program was a good intentioned program, but it hasn't worked. I still remember when I was in the EAB, I was with a gentleman called Andile. He's in Port Elizabeth, a very well-established a colleague and a friend of mine. We wanted to introduce something different from the One Learner. And we were apparently not successful. But the truth of the matter, it never worked. Those ones I'm talking about, I started off with about 50, ended up with 35, and now there are only 4 in the industry. Are the One Learner. And so we need, and to be honest, I just want to say this. This is not criticism of any organization. It is to ensure that transformation happens in our lifetime. That's all we're asking for, so that it happens. So that's not criticism. I'm seriously speaking, this thing was done without proper consultation with people that are on the ground and that can be able to say, listen, this is what has happened. As I speak, some of my interns have not received their certificates. When they call, they've not received the certificates. And what do I say to these children when they're struggling? And Madam Chair, the Transformation Fund, how should it work? My view is that I proposed earlier on that we need to support these interns with a salary, but government cannot be perpetually pumping money. This Transformation Fund will end up going into those kind of programs, assisting in PDEs, assisting in CPD, assisting in training as well. When the fund grows, those are the kind of things that we need to do. And last but not least, the Big 25, you asked me a question whether they played a role. Let me say this. In 2011 or 2012, we started negotiations with Riposa. We spoke for quite some time, and we never succeeded in bringing them around. Our view is that we cannot shy away from the fact that big business has got resources, number one. But however, we cannot be shy away and be apologetic about transformation. So for us, the issue is that we need to talk to them, have some common ground, and ensure that transformation happens.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mlambo. That was the last presentation, I hope. I haven't left anybody that still want to present that is here. Eh? Everybody has presented. That was the last presentation from the submissions that we received. And we really want to thank everybody. The conversation has been very fruitful. Big areas that the department and ourselves need to look at in terms of the process. I think the issue of the trust fund has come out very clearly, and how it should be dealt with. Because whilst it is there, how can we make sure that it doesn't kill the upcoming and small businesses? It has come across. The issue of the audit process has also come out very glaringly in terms of as we transform this industry. The duplication of membership and across structures that manage and control professional bodies, how do we make sure that we regularize that? The issue of the structural training is coming very sharply. Which then talks to the issue of the transformation fund and how it can be used probably to actually enhance the structural training. Of course, we're listening. As I have said before, the dates are going to come out very soon. We're going to provinces. Are they here already? Okay. Proposed date.
so that those that missed out would then join us in, we're hoping that on the 18th of September we will be in East London, on the 20th we will be in Durban, on the 21st we will be in Johannesburg. We take a break because it will be Heritage Weekend, and then on the 26th we will be in Polokwane, on the 27th we will be in Mangaung, and we hope that what we have done, the smaller provinces would then join the bigger provinces. So we're not going to Northern Cape. We're hoping that Northern Cape will come to Cape Town. And then they will also join Mangaung, and then, but the program is not finalized, it's still in draft form. Now, it is important that your organization attend these stakeholder engagements, because it then makes it easy for us to engage. You can see how nice it is to engage, eh? Yes, it's good for South Africans. South Africans must start to talk to each other, even on areas that they are uncomfortable with. That's the only way that we are going to be able to move forward. So let's support this engagement. Let's go to, we will put them also out there. We hope once we are done, we will then come back here and allow the national department to respond to what then has been said by the input. And each input. And then after that, we then, as this committee, we deal with the bill clause by clause. You see, we're still going fast. Clause by clause. Mr. Leroux, I'm sure you will be here that day. Clause by clause. Red bag. And that time, at least we will then know exactly what Mr. Leroux had said, what Mr. Mlambo had said, when you are then dealing with it. So we are still at the early stages. Nobody must despair, and I'm hoping that we will have good progress. We're hoping that at some point, Services CETA will then come back to us and tell us when they will interact with us without lawyers. We don't need lawyers, but we need you. We still want to talk to you, because you can see the issue of training is coming out very strongly, and we need your input on that, on how you can assist us on that. Thank you very, very much. That then takes us to the end of the meeting, and I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for having attended. You know, some of you came in the morning. You were here from the first presentation to the last one. You stayed, and we want to appreciate that. Thank you. You can go, but I just want the members to stay for 5 minutes, but the rest can leave. Thank you.
Thank you.